It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Alongside former Packer Brian Belaga, here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
Best 60 minutes of your day, the Brian Belaga Homer Hour, may actually talk soccer, but for no more than 2 minutes. Good afternoon, Brian, Doctor of Football.
How are we doing?
I'm doing fine. Did you watch the U.S. versus Costa Rica?
I sure did. I sure did.
I did as well, and I want to say I will never be proud for the U.S. to beat Costa Rica in anything.
No, you shouldn't.
I mean,
that was.
I don't know what. There may be something that Costa Rica should beat the United States, but I haven't discovered it yet. And I think that's like the 18th year in a row that the U.S. has made the semifinals of whatever it is. And I, of course, didn't know that because I didn't watch the previous 16. But I did. I know you follow soccer, and I am fine with people saying, I don't know what I'm talking about. I clearly don't know what I'm talking about and proud of it. But when Costa Rica scored to tie the game, a player was coming forward near the goal. There were two defenders. The offensive player split the two defenders without doing anything. They both stayed in their position, and the player went straight through, and that was a huge part of eventually getting the goal. I think that's bad defense in high school. I don't know, watching my daughter play, I ever saw two players that close to the goal do anything that stupid. So do you know what I'm referring to?
I absolutely know what you're referring to.
Okay, I'm saying this team sucks. If they're capable of being that bad on that play, there were other plays that just seemed like they're too good to be doing that. And they're paying their coach like $8 million, which is important. Only is that it's a lot, which means they think he's a very good coach. But I believe they, based on no knowledge of anything, believe they have no chance to do anything of significance if they're capable of being that bad defensively. And I can't remember. There were a couple of other times I thought it, but nothing was even close to that. So you follow soccer, you watch soccer, so you can say everything I said is wrong, or you can say whatever you want, because your words will be the final discussion of soccer.
Yeah, no, that was extremely bad defending. I mean, and it starts with extremely bad defending when the player from Costa Rica that initially drove the ball down to the end line was able to get a cutback pass back to the middle when, you know, majority of our defenders were defending him at, you know, the end line in the first place. And they were allowed the pass to come initially back to the middle of the box to begin with. So that's already like ridiculous to just start with. And then, you know, when there's free runners running through the middle of the box and we have two of our defenders just watching this guy, you know, a midfielder, I think Tillman was one of them, and I'm not sure who the other guy was. I have to go. I don't remember. Are just watching one of their players just run through the middle of the box and tap this thing in for the equalizer. Just bad defending. I mean, it's just really bad, and it all gets kind of covered up because they won penalties. But it really wasn't a good display. It really wasn't a good performance, and you know, they are obviously missing a couple of big player. You know, Pulisic didn't want to play in this. McKinney is with Juventus at the Gold Cup. Weah is at the Gold Cup with Juventus. Anthony Robinson, who plays for Fulham, didn't want to play in this either. So they're missing some good players. Anthony Robinson is a defender who's really good, who plays in the Premier League. But at the end of the day, like, if you're a team of only four guys, you know, those four guys, I mean, Way is a striker, so he has nothing to do with that. But if you're a player of three guys, I mean, you're in a lot of trouble. You're in a lot of trouble with, if you're looking at it from that standpoint. So this team is, from what I can see, going to struggle when the World Cup strolls around in 2026. They are going to struggle mightily. Depending on who they get drawn in their group, you know, based on how that all plays itself out, hopefully it's no one too difficult, because if it's a difficult group, they may be three and done in the group phase, which is not a good look for a host country to be three and done. So hopefully they can, you know, beat Guatemala in the next round, which you would hope they do. But Guatemala upsets Canada yesterday in Minnesota, right before, and penalties as well. So you just don't know how this is going to go. And that's the thing. Like, and I don't want to go on a tangent here, but, you know, Mexico, you know, they're rolling over there. But Mexico's playing a kid that's 16 years old. The kid is 16 years old. He plays 70 minutes. He's probably the best player for Mexico. And the United States does not play anyone that's 16 years old, doesn't play anyone that's 17 years old, doesn't play anyone that's 18 years old.
Is it because no one's good enough, or they just don't believe in doing it? I don't know.
Well, that's kind of my problem here, right? We're playing a Gold Cup squad here that doesn't have all the all-stars, right? So this would be the time to see if we have any of these youth players that are worthy of potentially showing themselves, right? Getting a call up. Like, is there any guys that we have that are 18, 19, 17 that are really good that could show themselves? And there's nobody. And that's a problem, right? Like, it's concerning.
I don't know. But
you want to know something that relates to the Green Bay Packers and the U.S. men's national team?
Yes.
Antonio Freeman's kid is the starting right back for the
U.S.
men's national team.
That's Antonio Freeman's kid?
Yes.
Oh, baby, now I'm going to watch him.
And he is a very good player. He's 20 years old. He plays for Orlando City, and he is a stud. He is very good. If he's not in Europe by the next year or two, I would be absolutely shocked. He is a stud, a great player, fun to watch, very aggressive, very offensive type fullback. He's a great player to watch. But overall, very nervous for this U.S. team. If you look at the U.S. team, it's Freeman, Luna, and the keeper, really.
Oh, Luna,
are the three.
The guy with the weird hair? I thought he looked like he was 45. Is he old or just?
No, he's not
very
old.
He's good. He made some great plays.
Yeah, Luna's really good. Those are the three guys that really stand out on that team. That you look for when all the superstars get back, when, you know, they start playing for the World Cup. Those three guys, the keeper obviously played fantastic in the PK shootout. Besides that, so if you look at the team, you got six guys out of the 11 that you really, really trust. And I'd say Richards, the center back, you know, he plays for Crystal Palace. I like him as well. You need more than six or seven guys when you're going on the international stage. You're going to struggle when you go up against teams like Portugal and Brazil and Spain
has never been good, have we? Were we ever good?
It's always been average. But the thing is, America is an emerging soccer country. It's becoming a bigger and bigger sport here. More kids are
playing.
They've
been saying that for 20 years.
But it's to the fact that I think it's being taken more seriously, and the approach it is being taken more seriously with the way the academies are being developed, with how they're trying to make it more of a, you know, European-based style, with how these MLS clubs have their youth academies and kids. Like, they're trying. It's not going to be like it is in Europe, because the way they have it down packed in Europe is to a science, and they give kids opportunities that they just don't do here. The process here in the United States is really backwards. It's not well done. And that's why you see kids, to be quite frank, if kids, you know, at a certain age, we'll say by 10 or 11, don't look a certain way on the field, they get thrown to the side, and that's why they end up going to play football, baseball, or basketball, and some of the best athletes, so to speak, walk away from the game, and they go play other sports. And that's the way it's been, right? Like, and that's the way it goes, and it's unfortunate. But hopefully that tide starts to change, and they keep these types of kids in soccer, and they continue to try to develop those kids, and those kids that would leave normally, they keep them in and continue to try to train them, develop them, so that they stick around till they're 14 or 15 and see if that comes good. And then by the time they hit 14 or 15, well, normally when those kids are getting into high school and they're great athletes and they're football players or basketball players or baseball players, well, they've been playing soccer, and then they can, you know, explode in that standpoint from a dynamic standpoint. But who knows, right? Like,
I don't know. Whatever you say, I'm going to agree with whatever you say. I just want to let you know I've never spent 5 seconds worrying about the U.S. soccer team. And the women were great. If they're great, that's fine.
Yep.
And if
the women are great. Stink, yeah, the women are great.
They stink, that's fine. I can't really say that I care that much about them.
I would just say I would like to see them do good, right? Like, I'd like to see them do good.
I think the U.S. men's team should be better than it is. Just don't ask me why. I think you
we'll
probably
explained. It's a lot of years of failed, like, scouting, development, how they promote kids, how they select kids, how they choose.
But that's
who's
the weird
good.
Part because the women have figured it out.
Because
how the women figured it out, and the men, if the U.S. just stunk at soccer, the women wouldn't be any good in either. Instead, they've been great. So.
Well, the way the women do things is separate from the way the men do things. Their selection and how they go about it is different from the men's side.
Wouldn't you do it the same way they do it, given their success?
I'm confused. Believe me, it is very confusing. It's right. Very confusing, but they do it differently. It's not the exact same pathways and programs and things like that. Because the thing is, like, a lot of these, the girls and the women, they go to college and they play in college, mm-hmm. and then they still are able to make the women's national team. Where if you go to college as a male player, you're nowhere near the men's national team. You're done. You're out of it. You're sayonara. Not even a chance. Moving along.
By that time, you should be playing somewhere professional.
Yes. Yes. Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
All right. Well, we're gonna. You are now our official soccer expert. And if anything else comes up, people can talk to you. I am not the soccer expert. I don't want to be the soccer expert, and I'm proud not to be the soccer expert. And I've told this once before. My daughter played college soccer, Division III. She was very good in basketball as well in high school, and she claimed I was always busier during the soccer season than I was during the basketball season, to which I said it had nothing to do with the sports. Soccer in the spring in Wisconsin is horrible. The weather's horrible. It's freezing. I don't care what sport you're playing. If it's that cold, I'm not going to go watch it. So she never bought it, not for a second. All right, to the Packers and the issue of the Bears quarterback. And whether or not you say somebody is better now because you can see he's better now, or because you believe at some point he will be better. Next.
This is the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
The best 60 minutes of your day, the Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. Surfside calling Surfside and Brian Bulaga. What a team.
Yep, that's right. I am here for my friends at Surfside, and summer is heating up, and there's nothing more refreshing than an ice-cold Surfside iced tea and vodka or Surfside lemonade and vodka to break the heat. Why I like Surfside so much, it just tastes cleaner than all the other drinks you can get at the store. Believe me, it doesn't leave your mouth feeling like you just ate a bag of candy or you just dumped a pound of sugar in your mouth. It just doesn't have that nasty aftertaste like all the other ones do. It's got a bunch of great flavors like my favorite, the half tea, half lemonade, peach tea, raspberry lemonade, and so many more. Made with real brewed tea and real vodka, Surfside only 100 calories, 2 grams of sugar, and 0 bubbles. That's right, no carbonation, so it's easy to sip and enjoy no matter what your plans are this weekend. Look for the can with the Sunset Stripes, sold at bars, restaurants, and stores near you. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly.
We were going to have some discussion about Caleb Williams, but everything is important as it relates to the Green Bay Packers, and the Packers are more important from the than the Bears. And we have Rob Demosky of ESPN listed Monk, the backup center, as the Packers' surprise standout of OTA and minicamp practices. The former Duke player took the bulk of the first-team reps. Almost all of the Packers' offseason practices were jogged through speed, Demosky writes for ESPN. So it would be unwise to make any major assessment based on those sessions. Seeing who lined up where and with what units was about the only thing worth noting in this regard. It's a good offseason for the second-year center. He's done a nice job, says Matt LaFleur. He's a lot more comfortable and confident in terms of going out there and knowing what to do. And for him, it's just going to come down to those live reps. Jenkins will be the starting center, but Monk, I just think it's all crap. But you're the doctor of football. Everybody, L. Jenkins is going to be in the starting lineup for the Green Bay Packers. If not, it's idiotic because they'd have to kick him off the team because he's making so much money, right? You can't pay him that amount of money to be a reserve, right?
Yeah, no.
Yeah. I mean, so they say, well, we want you to play center. No, I'm not going to play center. Then what would, I don't know, what are you going to find him for insubordination? I don't know. I think they'll work it out, but.
I mean.
You take it away. I'll defer to you.
Yeah, it's. Listen, the offseason obviously was really good for Monk, and why I would say that regardless of the reps being half speed or quarter speed or walked, whatever they were, I mean, it wasn't an offseason like we've said a million times where the guys said it, where it used to be, where you were getting about as close to full speed as you could without pads on like it would be when we were doing OTAs and mini camps. But for him, obviously, you know, he didn't get game reps last year. He didn't probably get to work with the ones probably at all. Like, if I had to take a wild stab at that, and I would guess that I would be 100% correct at that. So this was a very good offseason for him that he got to take those valuable reps working with the ones, working with Jordan Love, working with those guys next to him, being able to make those calls, make those identifications. Being able to kind of see that operation and what that felt like, and kind of, even though you were going through that at a certain tempo, there's still some, at least for a guy that hasn't been in that situation, there's still stress to that, right? Because if you make him, you know, blow a call or make a missed assignment, it's very easy to see, and you still can mess up a play even though it's half speed if you don't make the right call or you know, miss an assignment. So for him, those are valuable reps. So I could see how Rob would certainly say that he was the – I don't know if you could say standout, but I think you could say he was probably – the winner of the offseason because of those valuable reps that he was able to get because of Elton not participating. Now, am I saying by any means, if there was a actual competition where Elton came back in the building, resolved contract or not, and they went head-to-head in a competition, would Monk beat out Elton? No.
Not in a million years.
No, it's not happening. And that's not a knock.
I got a battle for you.
Okay.
All right. If Monk is that good, then he and Sean Ryan are battling for the center spot because I'd move Jenkins back over to the other guard, right?
Well, you'd move Jenkins back to right guard. Or, you move him to guard, and then Sean Ryan and them would – yeah.
Yeah, it's Monk, whatever five make the best offensive line, right? I mean, that's easy. That's – if I was going to discuss this issue with Jake and Monk, it's not about replacing Jenkins. Jenkins is in the starting lineup for the Green Bay Packers this season. Is that the position of the doctor of football, Brian Bulaga?
No matter what.
Yeah.
No matter what.
So the fifth spot now is between potentially Ryan and Monk, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, if you were to move Elton to guard.
Well, yeah. All right, which is a better, the key is what's the best two, right?
Yes.
Jenkins and Ryan, Jenkins and Monk.
Correct. That's your best.
Yeah.
That's your question. And like, listen, and this isn't a knock on Monk, right? Like, this is not that at all. We don't know anything about Monk
in
live situations.
We know he's not as good as Jenkins. You know that. I know that.
No, the Packers know that.
Everybody knows that.
No, I know that. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, like, if we're talking the combination of, we'll say, Monk and Jenkins at guard, that's what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, we don't know anything about Monk in a live game playing center in a regular season game, because he didn't even get that opportunity against Philly last year.
Did
when
Ryan
everyone
play center
got
at all? Am I making that up?
No, Sean Ryan played center at the end of that Philly game last year.
Right.
So he did play center. He got snaps there, which makes this whole thing really
weird.
It makes the whole thing kind of weird. So like, I don't know what to think of it. I think it's kind of like, for me, it's good for Monk that he got the reps. Do I think that there's no way that the lineup doesn't look like whoever wins the left tackle job, it's going to be the new signing at left guard. It's going to be Elm. It's going to be Sean Ryan. And it's going to be Zach Tom.
Now, that's can play either guard spot, right? Or am I wrong? Does one side make any difference in the other or not?
I think Elton can do it because Elton's been doing it. He's done it. I mean, Elton can play both sides because he's done that in his career, right? Like, that's something that he's been able to do. He's one of those rare players that's been able to go back and forth from side to side and, you know, play all the different positions. He's very versatile that way. But Jacob Monk would have to get into training camp, right? He'd have to get into training camp and have a dominant first 2 weeks of training camp. That would have to be what happens for Stenovich, Butkus, LaFleur, and Goody to go, okay, hold on, time out, wait a second. Like, let's look at this thing again now and see if we can make another shuffle, right? Like, see if we can relook at this thing again. But I don't know if that is even, I don't think that's possible at this point, or if that's going to be realistic at this point. Again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Monk.
Well, no, we now have, I think you now have seven linemen, and you're just deciding who's going to start right now. To me, the backups would be Monk and Jordan Morgan. And then I got the other five guys.
Well, and the second round rookie.
I guess that's
you drafted him in the second round. He's not going to be inactive on game days. I can assure you that.
Okay, well then you got eight.
Yeah, right?
Those are your eight guys, probably.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. And that's the thing. Well, and this is where we get into that discussion, right? Like, and this is what, when we had Jason on the last time, where when we were talking about the receiver numbers. When you start talking about how many receivers you keep and how many linemen you keep, this is where you start to get into that. You play with numbers of how many you can keep at all these positions on the active roster, right? Because you can't keep nine here and seven here. And the numbers just don't weigh out that way. So that's where this gets a little tricky. And if Monk is a viable backup at center at this point in time, you just don't let centers go, right? Especially if they're, you know, if they don't have any intention of bringing Elton back after a certain amount of time, right? And because of age or salary or whatever it may be, then you need to have a center in waiting. And if that's Monk, okay, then you need to keep him. You need to make sure he's ready to go. Well, he's the backup center, so he's on the roster. And if something happens on game day, Elton's shoe comes untied or his chin strap pops off, Monk needs to go in, be ready to go. So, like, that's where it comes interesting on game day, how many guys you keep active, right? I mean, and that's where this fun roster building comes to life in training camp.
And you also have guys you believe in. By the way, did you know this? Anthony Belton is 24 years old. How old were you when they drafted? You were 20 when you got drafted, weren't you?
21. I was 21. Yeah, he's 24, huh?
24. Oh, wow. I don't have his birth date, so I don't check it out. But I'll
turned 24 in February.
What?
He turned 24 in February.
Okay, so he's 20, almost 24 and a half. I wonder. I'll bet Jordan Morgan is younger.
Man.
Jordan Morgan's 23.
Yeah.
Man, he spent 5 years, the full 5 years in college.
Yes, huh? I don't. Yeah, you just. Some guys, I think they'll be more like that. They don't talk about age as much in football as they do in basketball. But either way, there you have it. We'll move now to Caleb Williams. Next.
You're listening to the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
With the doctor of football, Brian Bulaga, one other quick non-Packer note. I don't even know the kid's name. He's from South Africa, but he won the PGA event in Detroit in the playoff yesterday. And he looks a lot like Jack Nicklaus did when Nicklaus was very young. I don't know how anybody can argue that they don't have to change the ball. He's hitting it 340, 360 yards. Come on. But I will defer to Brian Bulaga, who's a 6 handicap. Did you watch any of it?
I watched a little bit of the third round. I
don't know what his name
round.
Is. Poltgeiser or something. I don't know.
Yeah, Podigeyer.
The youngest Podigeyer. Guy to win a satellite tour, youngest.
He moves the ball, man. He moves it.
And he carries himself with a level of confidence, not a cockiness, but just exactly kind of as I remember Jack Nicklaus. And for people who don't know, Jack Nicklaus, when he first started playing, was known as Fat Jack. Just like this kid is not really fat, but he's an offensive lineman. How about that? What would you say that? He looks more like an offensive lineman. They say he played rugby and other sports or whatever, but
He's a big boy.
Yeah. He's going to win a major for sure. But, I mean, they have those two guys in the playoff, and their first playoff hole, one hits the ball 361 yards and the other hits it 362. Come on. It's not golf.
That's what people love to see.
Yeah, but if it's 300, that's still good enough, right?
I mean, it's a good drive, but people want to see the long ball, man. And the thing is, you know, people used to say, you know, drive for show, putt for door. The stats have completely changed, and the statistics have now shown that, like, the driving distance has completely changed the game, and the putting stats have completely—it's completely flipped.
Well, because it used to be a good driver was hitting the ball a certain percentage of the length of the hole. Now that percentage is so much larger that changes it. I mean, par fives are a joke. There shouldn't be. That's what my first. There would be no more par fives on the PGA Tour. None. Zippo.
Unless you're playing at Oakmont.
Not even there.
Oh, God.
Not even there.
Not even there.
Not even there. We're not going to have a 600-yard par four. But, yeah, there's no. Now, theirs is a par 70, so four times 18 would be 72. So then, I guess you probably want a par. I don't know. You'd have two par threes. Now you're at 70.
So yeah.
How can you have a par five when the guy's hitting the ball 360 yards? Not just one. The other guy who.
Yeah.
I've never heard of it. Anyway, all right. Let's get to Caleb Williams, and this was on Fox, that afternoon show where I think Chad Wright is on or something. And this is the guy used to go work for ESPN in Chicago, or was it Fox?
Danny Parkins, yeah.
Did he work for ESPN?
He worked for ESPN, yeah.
Okay, and I don't know how this topic came up, but he said the following.
How about this? Caleb Williams already better than Jordan Love. How about that?
No one believes that.
I'm sorry, but it's true.
Really?
Jordan Love. has played the majority of two seasons, right? Both of those seasons, double-digit interceptions, 11 interceptions.
Love
each of those
went into Dallas.
Oh, yeah, because Mike McCarthy's never lost a playoff game at home and gotten blown out. Yeah, he had a nice playoff game. Congratulations. Here's the thing about Jordan Love. Guy had 11 interceptions both years that he played. Caleb Williams played 17 games last year, had six.
He's scared to throw the ball, Dan.
Right.
Jordan Love has Matt LaFleur of the Sean McVay tree. He has been, everything in the world has been catered to him. Jordan Love, the unbelievable ceiling, had a 63% completion percentage last year.
There you have it. I haven't looked that much at the numbers for Caleb Williams because just watching him play, he's so bad. But I'll have to look at that. And I understand. Here's what you say. I think that when their careers are over, Caleb Williams will have had a better career. I believe that he has more potential. I don't believe that, but I'm saying that's all he would have had to say, and no one would argue that point the same way.
No. Yeah, I mean, that's all he had to say, but to say that right now, that's an absolute
He needs to have his eyes checked. There's no – I don't think anybody involved with the Chicago Bears – I mean, as I said, I don't even know that his parents would think that.
I mean, if you ask me, right? You ask Ben Johnson right now, hey, do you want to trade Caleb Williams for Jordan Love? What do you think Ben Johnson would say?
Yeah, take him.
Yes.
Out. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, we'll take him right
68
now.
68 sacks.
Ugh. And the thing is, like, you know, they want to blame the offensive line and all those, and that's not the case. That is not the case. They're not all on the offensive line.
Explain sacks, offensive line versus on the quarterback. What's the reality? You watch the tape, and what do the coaches say? Do they always blame the offensive line? When do they privately, in your meetings, blame the quarterback? I know it's a tough question because we're talking about Aaron Rodgers, but I mean, it's still something to be addressed. Because it has to be to properly evaluate the offensive lineman. Forget about the quarterback, but to judge your performance, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, and there's, you know, especially when you have a gaudy number like 68, right? Like, that is a enormous number. And when you're breaking down film and there's a number like that, there's more to it than just linemen getting beat. Yes, the Bears offensive line got beat a lot last year. So, like, we'll, and I obviously I haven't looked at every single sack the Bears gave up last year, but I'll be generous to Caleb Williams. I'll say the Bears offensive line, we'll just say he's responsible for, we'll just say 45 of those. All right. Well, like, I'll be really generous and say 45 of those were on the Bears offensive line. So that leaves a lot on Caleb Williams. So, like, we normally looked at it like in this isn't just Aaron, this is just quarterbacks in general. There's a point when, like, offensive linemen, like, you know, you get to a certain, obviously, time in the pocket, right? Like, does the quarterback hold the ball too long? That's normally like a telltale sign, like covered sacks. That's another telltale sign. But there's also other things. Does the quarterback not step up in the pocket? Does he sit at his drop point for too long? Offensive linemen, we know, is it a three-step drop, five-step drop, seven-step drop? We know in our minds, if it's a five-step drop, he's hitting five or six and then stepping up in the pocket. So we know our arc, tackles, guards, where that depth of the pocket is. So if a tackle, say, for me, example, it's a five-step drop, he's normally hitting his back foot's hitting around, you know, six and a half, 7 yards, and then he's moving up in the pocket. So if the quarterback is sitting at, you know, 7 or 8 yards, and I'm thinking, you know, he's stepping up, and I start to run my defensive end around there, and the quarterback's right there, well, how's that my issue? I'm running my guy at the appropriate depth, thinking the quarterback's up further, and he's stepping up and moving up in the pocket. Well, what am I supposed to do? I mean, at some point, there's got to be some give and take there with the responsibility of the lineman, the drop, the depth, and all those things. There's also other times where the quarterback tries to escape the pocket. A D lineman sticks his hand out, pulls the quarterback down. That's a sack that sometimes linemen can't even see, right? Like, what are you supposed to do there? Like, you got your guy blocked up. Quarterback tries to get through the B gap or escape out the outside of a tackle, and the guard or the D tackle pulls him down, or a DN pulls him down. Well, What do you really want an offensive lineman to do at that point? There's really nothing they can do. So there's ways that linemen are doing their job, but sacks happen. And this isn't Madden, where the linemen are just standing in front of D linemen, and it's a perfect, like, baseball plate shape where we just stand in front of them and there's no movement and the quarterback just gets to sit back there. This is a moving pocket and the quarterback has to maneuver his way and kind of manipulate things and manipulate rushers. And to be honest with you, that's why Aaron was so good at it, because Aaron manipulated rushers. Aaron was so good at being able to, whether it was a 5-step or 7-step drop, when it was, especially when it was a deeper drop, Aaron was so good at baiting defensive ends to think he was just going to sit back there and they'd have a nice free clean, you know, rush, and he would wait and bait them, and then he would step up and
How do you bait them? Like, so he knows he can go up front, but he's not doing it yet. Is that what you're saying? I mean, I don't. How do you?
Yeah. He would buy himself time by still keeping his eyes downfield.
The average quarterback might run up sooner, is what you're
saying.
They would
step up at more on time. Yes, okay. They would, based on timing of how things are supposed to go. But Aaron, I mean, he played on schedule, but Aaron would play off schedule a lot. I mean, that's what Aaron did. Aaron
was
so good at it.
With the understanding, and you agree, that's a beneficial thing. There's a plus to doing that. If there was no plus, then he would step up earlier. I don't know all the particulars.
Yeah, but he understood that if I can obviously scan the field a little bit longer from where I'm at, and then I know my tackles, he knew myself, he knew Dave really well. If I can, I know what these guys are going to do. I know how they each like to block. I know if I can sit back here that extra click longer, and these DNs think they're going to get free and clear, and they're going to be able to, you know, just rush upfield. I know my guys are going to just push them right on by. I can step up, and the B gap's going to be wide open for me, because I know, for example, TJ likes to jump set, so it's going to be really firm up there. And Sitton, he likes to go high and wide with his guard, with his D tackle too. So like the pocket's going to open up really clean for me if I just buy that extra second of sitting back in the pocket, then climb it. So like, he was really good at manipulating rushers and creating lanes for himself. But there's certain ways. Like sometimes it didn't look as clean, and then he'd have to shuffle around a little bit more, and that's
fine. Let me ask you this. I've heard it. I didn't say it. You watch the tape. But one of the complaints against Caleb Williams was that he almost always, instead of stepping up, he almost always backed up.
Yeah, that's bad.
They claim was a major point in a certain percentage of the sacks.
Because
yes, backing, you have linemen that are offensive linemen. The tackles always want to push the end back further away, assuming then the quarterback can step up. Now, if your guards and center stink, then you have a problem. But I will defer to somebody else looking at it. But that's what I heard someone say, because they said that's the worst. And it's like, you just don't have quarterbacks do that. They're, I don't want to say smarter, but they just know that you can't do that. So if you can't, whatever you have to do, the last option is to back up even further, right?
Correct. If you back up, there is not a tackle in the NFL that can help you. There's no tackle in the NFL that's going to be able to help you if you
so
back up.
So we know what they're saying privately.
Yes.
Come on, someone thought us. Dude, you back up all the time, according to... I'll defer to somebody who's watched the tape.
I mean, just think of it. Like, say a quarterback does a 7-step drop, and say he's sitting around 9.5, 10 yards, and knowing that the quarterback's going to... the tackle thinks he's going to step up to around 7 yards, and he backs up to 13 yards... How is the tackle supposed to block, say, we'll just say any deep, I mean, we'll just say a great DN. How is he supposed to block TJ Watt for 14 yards straight up the field? How's he doing that?
The tackle then would literally be blocking Watt into the quarterback by pushing him back if the quarterback goes off further. All right, we got some great questions on YouTube. This is the future of radio. Everybody, I guess, wants to watch it on YouTube. I don't know why, but it doesn't matter. Because if they do, then we focus on that. We have some good questions for the Doctor of Football, Brian Bulaga, in the fourth quarter next.
Welcome back to the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
She's my little babe. Now she's college bound. I see all these hound dogs out there. The best 60 minutes of your day, the Doctor of Football Brian Bulaga Hour, and now we get to the questions on YouTube. Blue. Do you think Jenkins can be as good? I've actually never called you Blue. Do you think Jenkins can be as good at center as the team believes?
Yeah, I think he can. I think he could be really good. I think he's learned from probably one of the best centers that's ever played in Green Bay, Corey Linsley. I think he got to play next to Corey for a long time.
Corey was that good?
Yes. Corey was that good.
Wow.
Corey was that good. And luckily for me, I got to play with a lot of great centers. I got to play with him. I got to play with Scott Wells.
So what's the best thing about a great center?
They got to be able to obviously block.
Right.
Like, duh. But I think the first thing that centers that I always look for is how are they able to process the information in front of them and communicate that to everybody? Because that is the most important thing for centers, is spitting out information to the other four guys and obviously the quarterback behind him, of getting everyone on the same page before that clock runs to zero and the ball gets snapped. That is the most important
thing. How fast can a good center, maybe him, learn to do that? You can't be great at it your first year. Does it take time, or maybe not?
It takes time, but the benefit for Elton is that he's been in this system. He's heard every single call. He's seen every single thing that this system has to offer. So like he's been in this system and he knows everything about it. That I would have to guess that the last few years, when Myers has been the center, he's been helping Myers with a lot of these things as the games have gone on, right? Helping him identify things, pointing things out to him, helping him make readjustments. That would be my guess. If I had to, bet some cash on it, because when Corey first got in, that's what Sitton and TJ were doing for Corey, to help Corey out. They were helping Corey do these things early on. And then once Corey got the hang of it, Corey was just off and running. And Corey was obviously very smart, super smart guy. But it takes them, centers a little bit to process all this information, then still have to do their job. And then, you have the quarterback behind you, and it was Aaron, and Aaron demands a lot. And then you got to worry about the snap count and doing all these things. So there's a lot on their plate. So having guys next to you kind of help you out, helps.
So you would say that people didn't appreciate how good he was, I think.
If they didn't appreciate it, I'll let everyone know now. Like, he was that good. Corey was that good.
Wow.
Yeah, Corey was phenomenal. Right. So,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think Elton could be very good. I think Elton could be very good, yeah.
Would you consider moving Tom, I guess, to center? I don't know that that's ever come up, has it?
If it has, no. My answer would be no. I would never do that. Tom's going to get paid a lot of money this offseason to be a tackle. A right tackle, though, right?
Correct?
Yes. Yeah, oh, yeah. He's going to get paid a lot of money to be a right tackle.
If things got really bad at left tackle, would you have any problem with letting him try to figure it out or survive at left tackle? You don't want to do that.
Yeah. I mean, if it got really, really bad, yeah, I wouldn't mind it. I mean, I would let him do it and see if he could figure it out.
All right. That's all. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen, but I wouldn't prefer it. I would just put it that way. I wouldn't prefer mid-season. No, I would not prefer it mid-season.
And you're assuming, and I'm assuming because you're assuming, he's going to get a big contract.
Yeah, I think he's going to get paid a lot of money. Yeah, a lot of money.
Caleb Williams is not good. He was overhyped in college. No one believes that. I wondered about that when he didn't play in the last bowl game and whoever was the backup threw like six touchdown passes. I am curious to see what he does. I assume he'll be better because the system around him is better. If he's not better this year, they'll move on. The coach has no beholding to Caleb Williams, right?
Nope, I agree. Ben Johnson has no ties to him.
Right.
Yep.
But I believe he'll be good enough to keep playing for a bit. But we'll save that for the next show, which, of course, I'll forget to ask you about, even if I say no, I'm going to ask you. But I know that's what you're thinking. All right, the doctor of football, Brian Bulaga. Nothing has changed with Elgton Jenkins other than how good the doctor of football believes he is, and that hasn't changed either. Next. Love a woman that I